Now I'm going to introduce our first male speaker. Isn't that brave of him? This is someone that I have known since 1976. He is the husband of my best friend from college, and at various points we've shared houses together, cats together, lives together. And I was thinking about this the other night. There was a point where Fiona, who we know as Fiona Reynolds here in college, marched into her first job after her MPhil and began that career which has taken her all the way through to the National Trust, and now she's Master at Emmanuel. Bob looked at that time to have a career set out ahead of him as well. He's a chemist by training, and I recall him working for London Rubber, which, if you think about London Rubber products, occasion much merriment. Durex comes to mind. And I always imagine fondly that they would follow their two career paths. But then life changed for them, and Bob very nobly has made the same sort of move that Leo, who was the character referred to in Joanna Trollope's book, as we've just heard outlined, did as well. So I thought it was a very interesting follow-on from Joanna to hear from somebody who did that himself and is still doing that. And there are still cats and various other animals involved. So, Bob, over to you.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much for inviting me here to talk about fathers and fatherhood for the 21st century. And I understand I'm billed to give you the long view from a house husband who supports a Newnham career woman. Well, I'm not sure how to interpret that, but here goes. But before I begin, I would like to add a caveat. What I'm going to draw on is my experience as a house husband. But every case will be different, and there's going to be many factors affecting the situation. Job satisfaction, types of work and money will all have a bearing on the choice that couples make. And it may also sound perverse, given my billing for this talk, but I think many of the issues faced by house husbands are really exactly the same as those faced by housewives. So anyway, here we go. So here's us in 1995. Fiona and I were living in North London with our two daughters, Alice and Rose, aged 4.5 and 3. Fiona was expecting our third child in June. And up until then, it had been a fairly hectic time, with both of us working full-time and managing childcare for our girls. When our first child was born, Fiona had decided that she wanted to return to work as soon as possible. Her employer at the time was CPRE, the Council for the Protection of Rural England, and they were very helpful, realising that if she returned to work after just 6 weeks, she could stay on full pay during her so-called maternity leave. This suited all of us. However, I'm sure that one of their motives was that they didn't really want her away from work any longer than necessary, given her prominent position in what was a fairly small organisation. So for the first 5 years of parenting, I think we must have tried just about all the various childcare options, beginning with the childminder, working our way through a nanny, private nursery, and an au pair. In fact, sometimes we had a combination of those. I have to say that the different options, they all worked very well for us at the time, and we really have no regrets about what we chose. Fiona spent a lot of time with the children at weekends, and you see them on a trip here, on a visit to her tutor, Lucy Adrian, in Newnham Garden. However, the imminent arrival of our third child, together with the increasing pressure from work, was clearly going to result in a change in our lives and how we managed the family. Fiona was spending more hours working, her career was really taking off, and by this time she was the director of the CPRE and was spending a lot of time travelling. She was also involved in other roles within the environmental world. For myself, I was working, as Anna said, in production management, and I'd been working in North London with, as she has said, the London Rubber Company, who's more importantly was makers of marigold house gloves, for which I was responsible. But sadly, the company closed the factory in London, and production was moved out to the Far East. So that was me in those happy years working in my office in North London. Anyway, I then, once the factory and the office had closed down in London, I was moved up here to Cambridge to work in our R&D facility on the Science Park. And I spent the next 18 months commuting up and down the M11, leaving home at 7:30 in the morning and getting back about 7:15 in the evening, coincidentally, just as the Archers had finished on the radio. My job satisfaction was falling as things really weren't going so well with the company and the project I was working on, which was in fact another product that we made of condom, it really wasn't going very well. One of the main problems was that the product was full of holes, so that really wasn't very good. I remember one particular day, however, just having arrived at work, getting a call from Fiona to tell me that Alice, our four-year-old, was at the surgery with a nasty cut to her wrist which needed stitches. Poor old Alice had been rushing to wave goodbye to her mother from the upstairs bedroom window and had put her hand straight through the window. And I just felt pretty miserable being both 60 miles away up here in Cambridge and an hour and a half away and really just not being at home with them when they were at the surgery. So when I was offered redundancy soon after that, I really didn't have to think very long before making a decision. Olivia, our third daughter, was born about 4 months later. And this is a picture of the happy father with the new baby and the rather surprised sisters. Olivia was born at home, and I remember the eldest, Alice, coming down to see Fiona in the morning after Olivia had been born and lifting up the duvet to check to see if, you know, something had disappeared on Fiona and had arrived in the cot next door. Anyway, I have to confess that becoming a house husband wasn't a conscious decision to realise a lifelong ambition to be the main carer in the family. But at the time, I certainly didn't feel unhappy about it. And it looked much more attractive than the job I was beginning to feel trapped in. And in all honesty, up until now, Fiona had really been the one with the bulk of responsibility for the girls. She was dropping them off, collecting children at the beginning and the end of the day, living in fear of being late for the nursery, or rather frightening, but nevertheless brilliant childminder, Kathy, when the tube journey on the way home failed, as Kathy was really strict on housekeeping. Timekeeping. Although I loved the children and enjoyed doing things with them, I realised with hindsight that I was really a bit like the old-fashioned father getting home from work just in time to read a story and say goodnight to them. So it was chance for a change. I took on the traditional role of homemaker, getting the children to and from nursery and school, looking after Olivia, cooking and cleaning, all those wonderful things. It nearly all fell apart right at the beginning, though, when Fiona returned to work after 2 months this time. Olivia, the baby, flatly refused to drink from a bottle, from me or indeed from anyone else. And each visit I made to the baby clinic was a nervous experience as Olivia was put on the scales to be weighed. And they announced, oh dear, she's lost weight again. However, a lovely nurse there came to my assistance and said, here, let me show you how to get her to take the bottle. And she wrapped Olivia in a blanket and pinned her arms to the side and thrust the bottle in her mouth, and basically Olivia had no choice but to oblige. And crisis was averted, and have I gone too far? Oh, never mind, anyway. There's supposed to be a picture of me with Olivia feeding her, but that may come later. Anyway, this reminds me of an embarrassing encounter with a practice nurse as well. I've been taking Olivia for her regular inoculations, accompanied by three-year-old Rose. And then one day, just as we were walking along the street near the surgery, we saw the nurse who normally gave Olivia her injections coming towards us. And dear Rose, at that point, announced loudly, Daddy, there's that woman who makes Olivia cry. That was really embarrassing. So did I enjoy it? Well, of course I did, as I'm certain most mothers do. It really was lovely bonding with a new baby. And while the other two were at nursery and school, Olivia and I had fun. I think at least I had fun. I don't know whether Olivia did. I suppose she did. One of our favourite routines after a morning at playgroup was to go down to the local cafe on Islington Green. And I was on my bike with Olivia in the child seat, and we shared egg and chips, and it was great fun. And we loved visiting our singing group that we went to, TikTok, where we all sat in a circle with children on our laps, but me the only father. But it was certainly no holiday. I'm sure many of you will know looking after young children is a full-on job, especially with one at home, one at nursery, morning, and she was at nursery for mornings only, and then one at school full-time. So it seemed that I spent most of my day walking or cycling to and from school. No sooner was I home and had attended to a few things than it was time to go and collect somebody again. And here we see that in an effort to save time, I thought cycling would be ideal because it was just over a mile to school. So I always wanted to save time and energy. I thought cycling was a much better idea. And I had a trailer for Rose and Olivia, and Alice sat on the crossbar. And here we are just after we've got home. I think Rose on the right in the trailer has probably had a hard day at the nursery. She's fallen fast asleep. I'm not sure it really was the safest way to get them to school, but and having to navigate what you might know as the A1, the busy Highbury corner at the bottom of it, Highbury corner roundabout, with this contraption, really probably wasn't very advisable, but it was certainly great fun. We all survived. More seriously, the lack of personal time that you have when you're looking after children does make it very difficult to keep one's own sort of work interests going and keep the brain stimulated, as we say. The thought of doing anything else when children are so young is really just not possible. It is possible, of course, if you've got really good full childcare and you can keep working. But childcare is, as we all know, very expensive. And also, once the second child comes along, then the sort of balance between childcare costs and earnings changes. And I know this applied to two of my nephews who have given up work to look after their children. But in both cases, they're fitting in career changes around this new responsibility. One to pursue a photographic career, and the other to study to become a teacher. So it can be an opportunity for fathers to make a change in their lives and what they're doing. But life was good for me when the girls were young, and we were also lucky to have somewhere to escape to when half term came. My family have owned a small cottage in Snowdonia since I was 5 years old, so it was somewhere where I'd spent my holidays with my parents, and Fiona and I used it for holidays before we had children. This is the cottage that we have. So once I'd taken on the house husband role, we got into a routine on half terms, because half terms in London with two children was both hard work and also going anywhere. It really wasn't that cheap, actually. So I used to drive up to the cottage with the two eldest children when half term started, and Olivia stayed at home with Fiona, who was at work, but Olivia went off to the childminder during the week. And then Fiona would come up by train with Olivia to join us at the end of the week for a long weekend. And as you can see from some of the pictures that I took while we were there, the girls had a great time walking, climbing, playing in the garden. And it was just a really different to the urban environment they had back in London. But on one of our half-term holidays, I remember, Fiona was coming up on the Friday night, and she'd arranged to meet our childminder straight from work at Euston to collect Olivia from her so she could make a quick getaway, and Fiona was still dressed for the office. But I was up in North Wales, and by 10 o'clock I was waiting at Bangor Station to meet Fiona and Olivia off the train. And I think I was probably the only person on the platform at the time. It was pretty late at night. But there was somebody else there, a policeman. I was a bit puzzled as to why a policeman should be there, but anyway. And Fiona got off the train with a briefcase in one hand and a sort of baby in the other hand, and I think I must have taken a suitcase for her. And then the policeman and I both went forward to meet Fiona, which I thought was rather strange. Anyway, the policeman started to talk to Fiona and question her and said, is this your child? poor old Fiona broke down in tears, distraught. And the policeman explained in a rather embarrassed way that a lady who'd been on the train from Euston going up to Chester had reported this strange woman sitting opposite her with a baby who she thought she had abducted because she didn't really look like a normal mother. Fortunately, the policeman realised pretty quickly there was no truth in her suspicions. So, back to me. Soon after leaving my job to look after the family, I embarked on an OU PGCE teaching degree at the same time as I was looking after Olivia. We had some help from a second au pair. The first au pair we had was wonderful. She stayed with us for 2 years, but unfortunately that was as long as she could stay. Our second au pair was not quite such a good arrangement because it came to an abrupt halt one day after a couple of months when I got home from my teaching practice at the local school to find the au pair had gone and she'd left the key and a little note on the doormat explaining that she wasn't coming back. So that was a bit of a shock. And I had to take on the role of getting Olivia to nursery and everything. And basically, I suddenly realised that it was my turn to worry about all this collecting of children. And I realised the juggling act that Fiona had been put through while I was working in Cambridge. But as the children grew up, my role as a carer became easier. And that sort of prompted the question, you know, when is the right time to go back to work and ease off on the caring role? I don't think there's a simple answer to this, and it has to suit everyone's situation. And for me personally, I've been working as a learning mentor in a primary school in Islington, part-time. But when the National Trust, where Fiona was working by then, relocated to Swindon, we chose to move out of London, and we rented a house for the first year in Cirencester. And it wasn't as easy to find the sort of work I'd been doing down in Gloucestershire. I did get a job for one term working at a school for children with severe learning difficulties, but there really just weren't the same opportunities. But once again, having one parent at home full time had many advantages, and it wasn't just the practical matters, finding, you know, a house to buy and settling children in their new schools. I think being able to do the school run, walking the children to school, meant continuity for the younger two, because it was difficult to settle for them and to find new friends. What helped, though, as always, was getting involved in the school as a volunteer and then later as a parent governor. And it made it much easier to be accepted by the other mothers at the school gate, as it was more predominantly mothers doing the picking up than it had been in Islington. Our eldest, Alice, was launched into secondary school and was able to walk to school. However, this had its worries to begin with. Her routine got her home at 4 o'clock, normally about the time I got in from the primary school with the other two. But one day, she said she hadn't appeared by 4:15, and she was still not home by 4:30, and I started to get a bit worried. Anyway, she finally got in at about 5 o'clock, just as I was thinking of calling the police. Poor thing, not renowned for her sense of direction, walking home had turned right in Cirencester instead of left. And she got to the end of the main street, realising that she was wrong, and turned round to walk to the other end of town. And she was so nervous about asking someone for directions, but she luckily noticed a sign to the outdoor swimming pool, which she knew was just behind our house, and this got her back home. So that was much relief for all. When we settled down in our new home in a village just outside Cirencester, I started volunteering with an organisation called Riding for the Disabled. It just happened that there was a group based in the village that we moved to. And so for the last 12 years, that's what I've been doing. It's been my main responsibility outside of the family. My volunteering role with the RDA grew as the children grew up and their demands on me were fewer. I'm a great advocate of volunteering as an alternative to returning to employment, as it really does provide an opportunity to give back to the community. And again, it does depend, of course, on family finances and what one can afford to do and what one's circumstances are. But one of the big advantages of volunteering is that it's more flexible than being in employment often. And it can be helpful for the parents at home dealing with taking children to appointments and the old familiar call that we get, which says, when the school ring up and say, your child's not very well, Do you think you could come and collect her, please? But I'm not suggesting, you know, that volunteers shouldn't be committed to regular hours. Quite the contrary. I think it's, you know, it's part of the responsibility of volunteering. And now I manage about 40 volunteers who come to volunteer at our RDA group weekly. And sometimes they're terribly apologetic about not being able to come. And I always say to them, you know, don't worry. I know we've all got massive amount of things going on in our lives and you may have to miss the occasional session. You know, it's not a problem. But what I've also learned about volunteering is not to underestimate the value and the worth of it. When I'm often asked what I do, I say that I run an RDA group. And then later on in the conversation, I'll bring in the fact that it's a voluntary role, an unpaid role. I don't think the pay is the important factor in what you do. It's what you're achieving, what you're doing that is important. So what difference does it make with the father being the primary carer as opposed to the mother? I'm not really sure that I can answer this, but for me personally, it's given me a special relationship with my children. You might say that this is the father-daughter thing, but I've never had the experience of sons, so I don't know what difference that might have made. I may not have had the experience of kicking balls around with my sons, but I certainly do know how to French plait hair. And I'm also a dab hand at knit combing. But you do get that special relationship, certainly. And when our children were young, it was still relatively uncommon to be the father in the playground. But I did spend, as I've said, quite a lot of time helping in the school. And I think, you know, being a man in that environment did mean more of a gender balance in the adults the children encountered. And I still think there's a gender imbalance amongst the teaching profession in primary schools. I also believe that whatever you say, the working mother is better at being involved with her children's lives than a working father might be. I know this is a big generalisation, but I just feel there's a strong biological connection between a mother and her children that's not necessarily the same as the father and his children. But maybe we'll talk more about that this afternoon. But one thing that became very clear to me as a house husband was that it was easy to feel a low sense of self-esteem because of the choice to stop work and look after the family. And although I had a part-time role with the RDA as well as other voluntary roles, it was always that question which came up in social situations when meeting new people. And what do you do that made me feel, not so much a failure, but certainly sort of second class, perhaps. I'm sure this is something housewives experience as well. But in a way, I guess I felt it more as a man. I hope now that the role of homemaker, either mother or father, is becoming more recognised for what it is, something that is a real and important job. So all I want to do is finish with a picture of my three daughters, the result of a house husband and a Newnham career woman. So thank you very much, and I look forward to joining in a lively discussion this afternoon. Thank you.